Hey, everybody. Welcome to the UJ Sports Live podcast. My name is Roddy DeBulsey. I am joined by Dane Young, Jake Roos, and the Hall of Famer himself, Jim Dunn. And we are live on YouTube, Facebook, and multiple other platforms to talk about Georgia football. I am here at Classic City Eats on Baxter Street, which will be Classic City Eats in Watkinsville before too long if things go the way they're supposed to go. So, I know that we had some folks in here over the weekend, some guys from the Georgia football team and some of their friends and family were in Classic City Eats because they take care of the Georgia athletes. And if they can take care of them, then they can take care of you. So big shout out to Classic City Eats for that. Also, big shout out to our friends over at Academia Brewing Company. You know, we're kind of getting into the holiday season. And I tell people, you know, that a lot of our vendors and a lot of our supporters, people that take care of us, our sponsors, they all do charity work. Well, there's something going on at Academia Brewing Company I want to start the show with because I don't want to forget it. They've got a cause going on. It's called Beer and Cookies. It's a great cause. It's called Flights for Families. And it started this past Sunday on November 15th, and it goes through December. And basically, you get a flight of beer, you know, four different beers, small beers, and you get four different cookies with each one. And the proceeds of this Flights for Families actually goes to ACC SANE, S-A-N-E. And that is the SANE. It's a charity that is in Athens, and they provide victims of sexual abuse with a nurse and medical care that they need. So it's going for a good cause to take care of people who've that absolutely need it. But you go in and they pair up these beers with cookies. So let's see if I can tell you what they got here. So you get like a Galaxus Porter, which is one of the best beers they have. And they give you a pumpkin chocolate cookie to go with that. You get the turkey tail and get a double chocolate chip cookie with that one. The County Fair Remix, great light beer. They have a lemon cookie to go with that one. And then their Let Them Cello beer, you get an apple cinnamon cookie with that one. So cookies and beer for a great cause from our friends at the Academia Brewing Company. So shout out to them. If you get a chance to catch the game this Saturday, you want to watch it at Academia Brewing Company or come in here to Classic City Eats. All right. Speaking of watching the game this Saturday, I will be joining Dane Young and Coach Donnan on the Watch Along show. We have a lot to talk about when it comes to Mississippi State. So, Coach, I know that Kirby Smart gave his kind of overall picture yesterday of Mike Leach and the Mississippi State Bulldogs. But what are you seeing in Mike Leach so far this year? I'm having a hard time getting my head wrapped around the 2-4 Bulldogs from out west.
I think it's just a real paradox, you know, starting out the season with the big win over LSU, but, you know, now that doesn't look quite as good with the way LSU's faltered. And then subsequently, everybody just seemed to dial in the right kind of defense for them, dropping eight and rushing three and making them throw the ball in front of them. And now they've had a lot of guys opt out or either enter the transfer portal, and their squad's really diminished. Defensively, they're big up front. They take a lot of chances, a lot of movement up front, do a lot of different stunts with their linebackers and play a lot of man coverage. So they give you some chances to hit some shots on them, and you got to take advantage of it. We just don't know about Costello, their quarterback. You know, he missed the last game, supposedly up in the air. Just a team that's coming in here kind of trying to find some identity, trying to rally around the coach, trying to rally around the players, you know, as far as getting their confidence. Seems like there's a lot of give and take as far as what he thinks they should be doing and the players saying something different. But typical first-year turnaround and just been up and down. And, you know, probably we needed to play last week after that bad taste in our mouth against Florida, and we didn't get to. And still the way these games have been dropped around the country, you know, you just worry about testing whether percentage wise, whether we'll be able to play this week. Hopefully, listening to Kirby, they had pretty good results on their Sunday testing, and so did Mississippi State. So maybe after the testing today, they'll have a pretty good idea. They'll get results tomorrow, and we'll see if both teams have enough to play the game. Georgia hadn't had any really issues as far as numbers. I'm sure they've had some positives, but in the case of Mississippi State and LSU and teams like that have dwindling scholarship numbers, then you add the COVID to it, then you have a hard time getting 53 players ready for a game. So, you know, I don't want to throw any water on the fire here, but, you know, I'm just holding my breath. You know, last week we talked about the mouth-watering players of the game, and then about 4 or 5 hours later they called the game off with Missouri. So we'll just project this game like it's going to be played, and hopefully it will.
Yeah, that's our fault. I did want to – I mentioned last week when people started worrying about this game, I said, look, Monday or Tuesday, Mississippi State is expecting back a lot of players who had to quarantine or miss some time. And we have some good sources actually at Mississippi State. And they're like, no, their message to us was, we really think that game is going to be played. Now, of course, you know, things can change. Like you said, Coach points out, they're testing on Tuesday. They test, Sunday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, I believe. So, you know, things could change this afternoon, just like it did last week. But speaking to the folks in Mississippi State last week, they said, we really expect to get a lot of people back for Monday and Tuesday. It'll still be shorthanded, but and just like Georgia's shorthanded, Georgia's beat up. They haven't had COVID as many COVID issues as everybody else, but a ton of injuries. We actually have a story on the front page of UGASports.com right now talking about some of the defensive linemen who have stepped up, some of the new guys that are there. But, Dan, I see a lot of people who are just like, season doesn't matter anymore. You're not playing for the East, and they're just down. And I get it, because you're not where you want to be. But to me, last week's game was important. You needed that game against Missouri. And as Coach said, to get that taste out of your mouth, that's twice after a loss you've had 2 weeks to stew on it. But if you want to know who your quarterback is going to be, if you want to know who these new defensive linemen are going to be, if you want to work in some of those other guys at safety spots, you know, some of the wide receivers that need work, the tight ends that you want to develop. To me, there's a lot left to play for, a lot of development that bodes not only towards 2020, but 2021. So what do you want to see this Saturday when Georgia takes on Mississippi State?
Frankly, I kind of want to see some energy from the fan base. You know, I think perception is reality in a lot of cases with this stuff. So if a lot of fans are sitting there saying, you know, this doesn't matter, this is meaningless, the team's not any good, well, eventually players might begin to believe that. And if you don't think that's the case, look at what's happening at South Carolina, where, you know, obviously the on-field play was disappointing for Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks. He gets fired, and now you already lose JC Horn, who's opted out and not going to play the rest of their games. And it sounds like there's probably going to be some more attrition at South Carolina on their roster. And could that happen? I don't know. But what I would say is, for people that say these games don't matter, you've probably never been part of a close team. Or you've never worked at a place where you were that close with the people that you tried to accomplish a goal with, because these guys care about each other and they like playing football. You don't do all the things you have to do to play football at Georgia if you don't want to play football at Georgia. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lifestyle that's not necessarily the easiest thing to choose to do all the time. That said, just for where the program is headed, you've got a lot of questions that need answering. So, yeah, Kirby said it. Coach Donnan just said it. Football needs to be played so you learn more about your team and who they are.
That's a good point. And I think people forget the fact that, you know, you spend all that time practicing, spend all that time lifting those weights, you know, those 5 a.m. lifts, those 5:30 meetings with your tutors, all that work that you do beforehand. And, Jake, people are like, oh, well, if you can't be number one, then you stop playing. The whole point is to play the damn game, you know, to get out there and you know, develop your craft. Show what you can do, learn, show that you can do it under lights. We've had this debate going back and forth about the quarterbacks, you know. Well, this guy should be the quarterback. Now that guy should be the quarterback. And then when the lights came on, we saw a lot of the stuff that's projected from practice not show itself up in the games. You've seen guys who are great practice players who can't, you know, perform in the games, and vice versa. You've seen guys that we don't hear about in practice. All of a sudden they get into a game and they blow up. To me, you can only find that stuff out when this live bullet, so to speak. To me, I think people kind of forget the fact that these are football players. They want to play football games. We don't stop doing our podcast if we're not number one, although we are number one. But even if we weren't, we would still continue to do the show. We're not going to do it just because we can't be the absolute best. We're going to try to get better. You know, same with our website, same with the bankers. You don't stop giving loans just because you're not the number one loan broker in North Georgia. You know, Athens Ford doesn't stop selling Fords, you know, just because they're not number one in the nation. Number one in North Georgia, but you see my point. It just kind of, I don't get that kind of fatalistic cash, bag it all up and we'll try again next year attitude, Jake. What am I missing?
Well, you know, I think that I wonder how much different that would be in a non-COVID year. You know, I wonder if that's really the case here, because, you know, it's just been such a weird year. Everything feels like it's gone wrong. Georgia fans, you know, I mean, I don't blame them for being tired. You know, I think that everybody's kind of tired and ready to see this year kind of put to bed. But like you said, I mean, these guys are putting in all this work. You only get 10 opportunities to do this, and you've already had two of those taken away from you this year. So, you know, it's been an extremely limited sample size for these guys. They put all this work in, and they've had, you know, not the results that they wanted, but they've also not had all the opportunities they want to show it as well. And I think that that's something that has to weigh heavily on them as well. Now, I do agree with you. I think that it's big for building in the future. I think that it's, you know, certainly advantageous for them to get out and see what you got. I mean, this is an opportunity to really test out some of these young guys. Can somebody get on a hot streak? Can somebody catch a hot hand? Can somebody put themselves in a position where they're going into next season, you know, ready to make a play and with some confidence behind them at you know, at any position? I think that that's huge for everybody involved. You know, I guess what I'm interested in, though, and I want to throw this to Coach, is, you know, how has Georgia been dealing with, or how would you deal with, you know, the what they've run up against here with these bye weeks and these off weeks? You know, how do you keep the guys focused and on task when there's such a big gap of time in between those opportunities?
Well, last week was a little different because, I mean, they had Tuesday practice thinking full well they were playing Missouri. And so they had a really good plan, like you do every Tuesday, to work on your opponent, you know, whether it's short yardage, goal line, whatever phases they work on Tuesday. Some teams work on first and second down on Monday and Tuesday, and third and fourth down on Wednesday, but it just depends. But I think from this, just like COVID, the whole thing's been, you know, up in the air. So the game was called off. So Wednesday, knowing Kirby and listening to him on his presser yesterday, they worked some on started work on Mississippi State because that was the next team, and probably looked on Thursday at some of the other teams too, like you do in an off week. So you got a little jump start looking at South Carolina and Vanderbilt. So, but I do feel like that they were able to take off Friday and Saturday, and the best silver lining for us is a guy like Sean, who would have been up in the air last week, where you had two safeties out, which are really tough on you, to now have him go through the whole concussion protocol and also have another week on top of that to get his body back in shape. As far as, you know, when you have a concussion, I mean, it's a serious injury, and we've seen it in the pros. We've seen it everywhere. So having him back is going to be huge. Another week for Pickens is huge too. I mean, you know, shoulder's probably 100% now. So maybe that's going to help us, particularly against a team that plays as much man coverage as Mississippi State does. So I think from that standpoint, and, you know, people don't want to hear it, but you also had another week for Bennett to get his shoulder better. I don't know that he'll be ready. And based on what I've heard, that they've been really looking hard at Daniel, so probably wouldn't make any difference anyway. But the guy has been, he does give you somebody that, you know, strength or weakness wise, be better to have him than not, in my opinion, for the next few games. So we've got, you know, the prophets of doom saying that, hey, you know, we're out. But, hey, have you watched Florida's defense? I mean, last week, I mean, if they could have gotten any – when they got some stops on Florida, they didn't do anything offensively. But they had three plays over 50 yards on Florida. And although Florida's not really playing some great teams coming up, you know, Kentucky can keep the ball away from them. And LSU can hit some big plays on them. So who knows? Florida, people talk about them being a playoff team. Maybe they are offensively, but defensively, they just got some really big holes. So we'll see how that, you know, pans out as we go down through it. But it's a good question. How do you handle the off week? And how do you keep your team focused? That's all you can do is talk about, you know, here's the way my bottom line look at it. We've been practicing since July the 13th. We've been going, and why do you practice? To play the games. And we got three more opportunities. Let's take advantage of those, and let's see what we can do. actually four more. So when you got to makeup, so let's, hey, we didn't start all that and go through all this testing and go through all this, you know, protocol and wiping everything down just so we could play, not to, to play these games. So I think they mean a heck of a lot to the players over there at Butts Mirror.
Yeah, I agree.
And what did I just say about South Carolina, Roddy? Israel Mukwamu now opted out for the Gamecocks. That just came down on Twitter. So
it may not be a COVID issue. They may just not have enough numbers of guys available when things come down.
That's their two corners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish he would have last year when they played us when he got.
Yeah, if Georgia fans remember, Mukwamu had three interceptions last year to help South Carolina upset Georgia.
Yeah, so, and now you worry about that game from a number standpoint. But I'll say, like Coach said, and I'll repeat it, all the work that Georgia did to get to this point, you know, all those practices, all that social distancing, all the sacrifices. And again, I don't think folks realize how hard these guys work, even just to stand on the sidelines. The guys that don't get into the game, I mean, there's all the lifts, all the runs, all the practices. Practices are hell. Practices are way worse than the games. You know, they're physically taxing. There's a lot of guys that are banged up and hurt out there. And there are a lot of guys who are fighting for their chance. So I go back to Marcus Rosemead-Jack Saint. We see him play 58 snaps, you know, and he does okay. But then in the Florida game, he looks fantastic. Then he gets hurt, you know. But again, that development from the first game that he was into the second game is like great. You know, you see Darnell Washington getting better. You see Zion Lowe getting better. You see some, you know, I mean, we never saw this many snaps from Chris Smith, but you got to be excited about how far he's come. So to me, it's like, look, I know people get frustrated about not being in the SEC championship. And again, it's still possible. You can still get there. But let's say you don't. You didn't get a spring. How frustrated does Todd Monken have to be from trying to bring in all his quarterbacks and develop his offense with no spring practice, none whatsoever? So you're trying to learn who's going to be good in fall camp, and then you lose a quarterback there, and then you have all the issues with that. So to me, it's like, folks, you were freaking out about not seeing spring camp and not getting G-Day. At worst case, even the most antagonistic doom and gloom proponent has to be excited about, you got in your mind, if you're not watching it the same way we are, watch it as four scrimmages to find out who your quarterback is going to be, or at least what you have at quarterback. And other folks are upset about, maybe, well, what if Stetson comes back? Well, hey, you need another player. Quarterbacks get injured all the time. All depth is good. So to me, at your worst case, take it as a chance to get better for next year. And right off the COVID year of hell. Speaking of good things that have come out this year, though, I do want to point out, I mentioned that academia is doing great when it comes to their charity event with the ACC Sane thing and the cookies and beer. And I mentioned last week that our friends at Athens Ford are always, they do a charity event each holiday. This year, they've teamed up with the Salvation Army. And if you go out to Athens Ford, you'll see this giant Georgia Bulldogs Christmas tree. This huge tree just covered in Georgia ornaments, Georgia paraphernalia. It's a fantastic Georgia Bulldogs tree. You got to check it out. Be a great place for you to go out there, snap a photo, let that be your Christmas card. But they also have this huge truck full of Christmas gifts. So every time you buy a vehicle, new or pre-owned out there, they are going to either put in a jacket, a coat, a toy, all these other stuff for the Salvation Army of Athens, Georgia. So again, you get something that you need, and they will make sure that a child gets something the child needs. And they do this every year. I mean, they've done the bikes out there. They've done the presents and toys. This year, they're filling up a truck full of Salvation, and it's a red truck, so kind of like a Santa sleigh. So check them out. And of course, if you go online, you'll get a $250 off coupon for any vehicle you buy. So check out our friends at Athens Ford and get all the 2020s, sedans and SUVs they're either $8,000 to $10,000 to $14,000 off, and almost all of them have the option of 0% financing for 5 or 6 years. They don't have that on the trucks, but the trucks are highly discounted. So check out our friends at Athens Ford. The deals they have right now are unreal. And speaking of charity, we always say, hey, these guys are doing good charity work. Our friends at Masada Leather are also doing, they're making masks. You can actually help them make masks for the local first responders. Go out there. They're looking for certain fabrics. Go to masadaleather.com. They're in 5 points. Check them out. You can actually, they're looking for, they need materials. You can help them by donating certain materials. They'll make the masks. I'll show you how to make the masks. They'll make them. They will distribute them in the Athens area. So they're taking care of their community, just like Irvin and the folks have since 1975. And while you're there, it's the holidays. So get some of those Birkenstock, get those custom sandals, get those custom bags, get those custom belts, get all the great gifts they have out there. Hats, ton of great hats. I didn't even realize I had hats. So I went by there the other day. Check out Masada Leather in 5 points and help them with their mask making, or check out Athens Ford and help them with their gift giving. So both are good for you and good for the community, and we appreciate them. Jake, I think we got some, I know we got a lot of questions, but I want to turn it over to you real quick for a recruiting update. What's going on in the world of recruiting? I know a lot of fans are like, 2020 sucks, but recruiting seems to be picking up a little bit. Seems like every week there's a new Georgia commit. It hasn't been like 10 at once, but week after week after week, that number's starting to fill up.
Yeah, they're staying steady, that's for sure. You know, I think they've done a good job of that and maintaining momentum here down the stretch. You know, going to be interesting, I think, to see how, you know, we still don't have any determination in terms of early signing day or not. I'm assuming for now that it's still on just because we haven't heard otherwise. But report from Dennis Dodd the other day that, you know, now they're going to push the dead period up until, I believe, April 15th of 2021. So, just a really weird time on the recruiting trail. I mean, I don't know how they're asking these kids to make these decisions without having visited some of these places. I think that what it's going to do is open up just a, well, I almost said the portal of hell, but that's already what that thing is. You know, when it comes to the transfer world, I mean, I think that you're going to have more transfers out of the 2021 class than probably any class previously, just because kids, I think, are taking total flyers on things. They're relying on, you know, phone calls and text messages and Zoom calls more so than the opportunity to be close to these people and spend time with their potential future teammates and coaches face to face. So really an interesting time. And I will say a couple things everybody should probably be watching for. I know everybody's interested about Will Muschamp's firing at South Carolina, and how does that affect 2022 quarterback Gunnar Stockton out of Rabun County, a guy who was down at Georgia and South Carolina when he made his decision earlier this year. I will say temper expectations for now. As long as Mike Bobo and Connor Shaw are part of that staff, I don't see him making a move. Now, will they be retained? Who knows? I have no idea, you know, past what happens. But until that happens, until those determinations are made, expect Gunnar Stockton to stick with the Gamecocks. You know, I think that for the foreseeable future, you know, and certainly I think even the next staff possibly coming into South Carolina will have an edge with Gunnar, just because, you know, he's got a lot of ties to that program. I think Connor's a guy that could end up hanging around the program. He would make a lot of sense to keep around given the legacy he's got there. His brother Jabo Shaw is the coach at Rabun County. A lot of reciprocity there. So even though Georgia, it's still in the mix and definitely will be a player, I think, if Gunnar decides to open things back up, I do think South Carolina probably still the team to beat, even with a coaching change. I think that he was open to the idea of getting up there and trying to revamp the program as well. So I don't see that being a huge factor for him.
And Jake, I actually think it says a lot that Mike Bobo brought Connor Shaw on the field to be a quarterback's coach while he steps up as the interim head coach. I think that says a lot for what he thinks of Connor and then what Connor means to that athletic department.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, I mean, you never know what's going to happen with these guys in terms of carryover, but he's a guy who would make all the sense in the world for me to stay on the South Carolina staff just because of the ties, you know, all of it, it's there. And I mean, hey, you could do worse than to keep the guy who's the brother of the head coach of your coveted quarterback around. Now, I will say it's Tuesday today, Wednesday morning, for those of you who will be listening later in the week, Wednesday morning, 8:30 going down at Paulding County High School out in Dallas, Georgia. Smile Munden going to announce his commitment, Rivals 100 commit. Boy, can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to standing in the 45-degree weather in the morning with the frost on the ground. It's just fantastic. I love COVID because we can't go in the gym for this. No, but, I've said – I've said for months now, I went back actually and read something that we did in June. And I said, you know, I feel like Georgia pulls this one out. I think that I still feel that way going into it. Tennessee hosted him this past weekend. So the Vols probably your biggest competition right there and are really making a push for Smile, you know, up here until the last moment. But I think Georgia feels very confident. You know, after Barrett Carter of North Gwinnett announced his commitment to Clemson, I think that only up the stakes for Smile Munden. You had to get one of these in-state linebacker targets in. Linebacker's a big need this year. Smile's a guy, 6'3", 210, 215, does a little bit of it all. Slight tear in that meniscus, that's not anything I'm concerned about long-term. I think he'll be ready to go. Plans to early enroll, and I think could be a guy who reminds a lot of people of Quay Walker. He's got a very similar build and plays in a very similar way to Quay. You know, just a big, long guy, very quick and all around the field. So definitely something to watch for on Wednesday morning. You know, we'll have you covered at UGASports.com.
We'll get you down there and hear about all your whining being outside. You
poor. At least I get to go to Martin's, though. They do have that Martin's out there, and I do love a good Martin's biscuit. If you haven't gone to Martin's, check out their breakfast. It's awesome. All right, well,
bring me a chicken biscuit on your way back. Coach, the idea that you're going to have the dead period extended through April 1st or April 15th, you know, after basically losing all summer, all fall, all winter, well into the spring.
A full year.
How the hell do you sign kids? How do you recruit in this? It just, I mean, we give the coaches a lot of grief sometimes, you know, when it comes because we don't understand what they're doing. We don't know their pegboard as who they want over. We try to guess, you know, this is their number one guy, this is their number two guy. Without them being able to go out and see anything in spring, they couldn't see spring practice, they couldn't see these games in person, they're trying to watch everything on Huddle. How the hell do you recruit right now? I just can't understand. I feel bad for the coaches and bad for the players because it just – and I know you got to do this to stay safe, but I just don't understand how either one of them makes that decision.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, behind the scenes, they're getting these kids to do these virtual camps where – they give them a workout that they want them to do, and the coach supervises it, and they go through the cone drill. They do the 40 and have two people time them. They do the vertical jump, and they get all that stuff on tape, just like you do on Zoom on an intermediate-type deal as far as us looking at each other right here. And I think that's been very proactive. And they actually have the technique that they show them how they're supposed to measure their arm span, measure their all those things. And they and the kids, so they have that data, which really helps them compared to, you know, not having it and not having the camp, which is really the best version of figuring out whether you want a guy or not. So that in itself is not as bad an issue as it would have been without that. And then they also got these virtual visits where they'll bring them in and just pretend like they're going to see the campus and have an interview with an on-campus instructor, show them the, you know, facilities, all that stuff, just really organized, got really beautiful videos of all that stuff. And then they focus it on one person, like it's just you, and you really can do a better job. I mean, except face-to-face, than you can having a big group on campus because you're having to have 7 or 8 or 9 kids keep up with them. Now you're just doing one person and everybody on your staff's working him. So that helps you a little bit, but you lose the players. Although a lot of these kids, like you mentioned, Munden going up to Tennessee, a lot of these kids are going on campus on their own. And so they get to meet the players, but don't get to see the coaches. But I think it's just like the economy as a whole. It's just like everybody as a whole. It's like me taking my wife to the doctor. I can't go in, you know, but I talk to the doctor on the phone while she's in there getting her test and everything. I mean, it's like I'm in there, but I'm not. I can't. So
that's true.
You just got to adjust, and that's what our staff's done. And, you know, we're having a good year, having a great year for the next class. I mean, we're off and running. And you go back to last year when we signed those seven in-state players right off the bat. Boy, that really gave us a really good jump start because gave us a base where we could maybe still hang in there with the Smith down in Louisiana and Foreman and those guys, as compared to if you didn't get those seven right off the bat, who knows where we'd be. But we're having a good year. We got a really good freshman class. I mean, can you imagine Broderick Jones and has got four more years. Ringo's got four more years. Tate has got four more years. I mean, you got three five-star players, and Washington, if he wants it, he can play another year. I mean, none of this year counts. So we got them stockpiled here from that position, from that standpoint, as far as players on campus.
You know, and I, one of the things that I've tried to point out to people too, and I hope that people will hear this, is that, you know, don't, I hate to say this because rankings are our business, but don't put as much stock in the rankings this year as you have in previous years, because there are tons of kids who are flying under the radar because there are games that aren't being played. There are camps that haven't been held. We're not going to get to see any all-star games, whether that be the Adidas All-American game or the Under Armour game. There are kids that have probably taken huge leaps and bounds forward from last season. It always happens over the course of a senior year that some of these kids gain a lot of steam and really kind of come into their own, you know. And so I caution people to be star hunting this year, because I do think that it's a case where a lot of guys are going to fly under the radar. And frankly, I expect that a lot of lower tier teams or teams that don't normally recruit as well may end up with a couple of gems in their program as a result of this.
You make a great point there that I want to just add to, and then I'll get off here. But real quickly, when you're talking about the gems that are available and all, here's the thing. We know about the players that didn't get to play this year that were ranked so highly. I mean, they've got that. But there's players that didn't play that would have come on that would have probably been really good players that, you know, you thought, hey, Kirby tells them, look, you have a good year and you come to our camp, we're probably going to go after you. But they don't even have football. I know I was talking to Pat Fitzgerald, the coach up at Northwestern. His son's an elite tight end up there in Chicago, Loyola High School. They didn't even play football this year. And, you know, he was a pretty good junior, but he was supposed to be a really high rank. You can look him up there. I don't know. Going to be a great senior, but more than likely he didn't get near the exposure he would have gotten, even though he's Fitzgerald's son. But you made a great point there. There's tons of players that are going to be available as these non-Power 5 teams just because they got looked over because they didn't have a senior year.
Well, and I think too, you know, you've got to, you mentioned, for example, Illinois not playing football this fall. North Carolina didn't play football this fall. I think that, you know, we've seen in the past, you know, those guys that kind of catch on after signing day, after the early period. Brett Seither comes to mind as one of those guys that Georgia really ramped up pursuit for after they signed everybody, put in, went heavily after him. You know, once these practices resume, assuming they do, and these guys start getting, you know, some game reps, they start maybe getting closer to playing in these places like North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina is a hotbed of talent. Yeah, there's kids up there, I guarantee you, that haven't been recruited up to their up to where they actually fall in the rankings. And I think that you'll see a huge rush at post-signing day to go out and kind of unearth some of these gems. Because, like I said, I think there are a lot out there this year.
Yeah, one more point. This spring, when you see these 1AA teams playing, all these schedules that they're going to play, these coaches are going to be stacked up like cordwood watching these guys trying to figure out who they want to get to offer to transfer. I mean, because they're going to have the one-year exception and all that, there'll be so many 1AA players coming in to our program around the country, ours, anybody. It's just going to be like watching the AFL on this spring, you know, the NFL picking up those players. There'll be so many players.
Oh, you're over the mic, Coach. You're over your mic.
It's not fair to the coaches there, but it's going to be really bad. I mean, I hate it for these smaller schools, but they're going to jump all over these guys.
They're going to get ransacked. And I think, too, you know, Georgia pushing it, I think sitting at like 18 commits today, wouldn't surprise me if they left themselves a little bit of playroom, you know, past that, past to get around that 25, as you mentioned, for the opportunity to see some of these guys in action. Georgia not been as active in the JUCO ranks as they have been in previous years. You've seen Deshaun Warren is already committed. They're looking at Byron Young down at Georgia Military College. We had a story on him a couple weeks back. But, you know, I think that, like you said, there's a big opportunity for a lot of guys to get in there and make a name. So don't be surprised if they temper the numbers down just a little bit heading into early signing day so they can maybe get a look at some other guys when it rolls around in the spring.
I think it's going to be interesting when you see that there's been the idea that with the transfer portal, some of the guys that, you know, the big schools got that, you know, haven't been able to play as much. You know, when you stack up 25 mostly 4 and 5 stars, and they all can't play. So some of them transfer to the schools, and a lot of the smaller schools like, oh, that's going to be great. You know, we can get some of the kids at Clemson, Florida State, Florida, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia. You know, if they got a 4-star over there, he's just, you know, third string, he'll transfer here and play right away. That's great. And then that'll create some great parity. But by the way, that really good cornerback you have, yeah, he's going to Alabama. He's Georgia's going to come after him. So you're, I think that the composure of your team is going to change a lot from week to week. One thing that won't change, though, is the dedication our friends over at Aaron Overhead Doors have when it comes to taking care of their customers. Again, we talk about each one of our sponsors being so good when it comes to charity events. Well, this is the time of year that Aaron Overhead Doors, their employees go to Ryan Lucy and say, hey, I have somebody who we can take care of. I have somebody who needs some work done, and they go out and they do it for free, because Ryan and the folks over at Aaron Overhead Doors are just fantastic people. Now, they've expanded their service area, so if they've taken care of all the people in their immediate vicinity, now that they're in like 5 other counties that they haven't been in before, there's more opportunities for them to take care of people outside of that. So they can take care of people in Dawson, Hall, Walton, North Fulton, Forsyth, White, Stevens, Barrow. And the Aaron Overhead Doors is up for an award, and so is his media company. He has Such and Such Media Company, which is basically that he helps people do podcasts. So maybe he could help us. But our friends over at Aaron Overhead Doors are taking care of everybody. And it's a Tuesday, so we talk about things that you know, things you need to do on Tuesday. Well, Tuesdays, if you are like me and you enjoy a good pizza, check out our friends at YourPie. They, on Tuesdays, if you use their app, you get double the points. And they have a point system, so every time that you order through the app, you get points, and then you get free pizzas, free breadsticks, free ice cream, free everything over there, free pasta. And you can, if you order on Tuesdays, it's double the number of points. So
you call it ice cream. It's gelato, you uncultured swine.
It's ice cream because I can't say gelato. So. I had chocolate ice cream, and they have in these little things, and it's really good. But the best thing you could try right now, and again, this is a limited time deal because, you know, they do seasonal pizzas, but you got to try the hot honey pepperoni pizza. They take the crust, and you can get whatever crust you want. They put marinara on it. They put pepperonis. They put peppadew peppers, house pickled jalapenos, feta cheese, mozzarella cheese, fresh basils, and they drizzle the whole thing in Mike's hot honey. It is a phenomenal pizza. It's probably the best one they've ever created. I know their peaches and prosciutto was a big hit, but the hot honey pepperoni pizza with Mike's hot honey is phenomenal. So, and again, order it on a Tuesday because you get double the points. So check out our friends at YourPie, a ton of locations near you, plus our friends over at Aaron Garage Doors, because they are they also do great community service, and we appreciate them supporting us. Jake, you want to jump into some of the questions we got?
Yeah, we got a few actually this week that people wanted to touch on. I like this one. Apropos of nothing related to football, just life in general. Just John 419 on the board says, when is life going to be fun again? Will it be 2021 or more like 2022 or 2023? John, I hope it's as soon as possible, buddy. I really do. Now we got this one. I like this one from our buddy UGA alum 95 over on Twitter. Yeah. He says, Coach, what can you tell us about the O-line's performance so far this year? You know, how do you feel that they performed? I know that that was an area of concern coming in, replacing so many guys up front. You know, how would you say that unit's grown, and what have they shown you to this point?
Yeah, I've seen dramatic improvement week to week, play to play, scheme to scheme, pass pro, running assignment-wise, effort, technique. I watch these guys, you know, when I'm here, I get a chance to look at a lot of stuff, and I've just seen dramatic improvement. Particularly McClendon has made a significant improvement throughout the year. Cleveland's had a big year, really done a good job. One of the highest graded guys in all of the Pro Football Focus around the country. We've had a couple bad snaps from Hill, but again, he continues to play well. Left guard, Schaefer's had his moments where he's gotten beat, but everybody gets beat. And then Salyer made a big change, the left tackle, and really has not given us any bad plays at all. You know, a couple of times people are going to beat you on a pass rush, but that happens. But overall, just really happy about that. And then, like I mentioned, Broderick Jones and Tate Radledge are making really good strides here, getting a chance to work a lot on the scout team against our defense. And then you got the other guys moving up. But I think the O line, you know, we don't know what Schaefer, if he'll come back or not, but and Cleveland, with the year he's had, he's probably, with his stats and all, he'll probably go pro. But I think the O line really looks good for the future here.
I really wanted to see Cedric Van Pran play. I mean, again, I'm not saying take Hill out. I just want to, because he's such an interesting character, I really want to see him get in there. Same with Austin Blasky. He was kind of a mystery to a lot of us. We didn't know a ton about him. I want to see him out there. Chad Lindbergh, you know, the guy that the legacy that a lot of people want to see. We want to see what he could do. And that mountain of a man in Devin Willick, you know, that brought in this huge offensive line freshman recruiting class. And it's still a present to be unwrapped. You know, I'm really just – I know a lot of people are down on the season, but I'm like, man, you haven't even touched – it's like you've had dessert, but there's another pie, and you haven't even tried that pie. So I'm really excited about seeing what that offensive line can do. But I agree with Coach, the transition that we've seen that first game. Remember how against Arkansas you were struggling on the offensive line across the board? That's not one of the issues that we talk about now.
Coach, is there any position group that is more affected by the lack of the spring practice and the lifting than the offensive line? I know, I mean, that's what those guys do. They throw around heavy weight, right? I mean, were they the ones that were probably most, I guess, hamstrung by this, by the lack of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other guys that handle the ball, they can throw to each other and run routes and people can cover you and play, you know, one-on-one against defensive backs. But, you know, not having the supervised weight training and all that, and particularly for the young guys that really don't know the techniques that they would have gotten having the whole spring and summer in here under Sinclair, I think that's pretty vivid. But, you know, the people can be down, I understand. It's kind of like Alabama last year. You know, Alabama had a rash of injuries, and then defensively they didn't play very good, and they lost two games. And it's the end of the world for them, you know. I mean, they got beat by their arch rival in Auburn, and they also, you know, lost another game and didn't make the playoffs. So it's just a case of I think we're kind of like that. I mean, we got a lot of these guys back. You know, we'll just have to see what happens as far as reloading. But, you know, we're still going to be right there. I mean, I really think I can't say that Florida's passed us based on one game. They certainly hadn't in recruiting. And, you know, when Trask leaves, who, you know, how good's Jones going to be a quarterback? I mean, there's a lot of question marks for them too, but I just want to re-energize everybody from a standpoint. 4-2 is not great as far as the national picture, but as far as the SEC, not many teams in the SEC besides Florida and us are in that position. So we just got to keep on and shoot for 8-2, get in the big bowl and use those bowl practices and see what happens.
You left 28 points on the field against that Florida team.
Just came across from Brent Rollins. Josh Kendall at The Athletic says safety RJ Roderick and defensive lineman Micaiah Scott also opting out for South Carolina. That's three of the four starters in their secondary. So that's pretty huge. I think, Roddy, you mentioned Todd Munkin's frustrations earlier. I assume he might get some of those out against the Gamecocks coming up.
That game's not going to be played.
Not with those. Not, I mean, not if those guys keep opting out.
I mean, we get one test And then anybody who was in that room with the guy for the last whatever, they all have to sit out. So, and again, remember, it's not just the 53-man roster that you have to hit. If you lose too many at any given position, you know, yeah. So if you lose enough guys in the secondary, you have to cancel the game. If you lose enough guys on the defensive line, they're out. You know, too many offensive linemen out, then you can't play that game.
That's so, another reason for, you know, nothing against Tanner or anybody that fires a guy, but during the season, people don't realize how these kids feel about the head coach and feel about their future. And you look at them selfishly, they're saying, hey, why should we go on out there? We've been out here and played seven games and did everything we can for South Carolina. I'm going to look after myself. That's what South Carolina's doing for the program. They're bringing in another coach. So that's just the way it is. You can't blame the kids, can you?
No, not at all. I don't at all.
No, because to me, I know you fire the – I don't understand the midseason firing. I've never been a big proponent of it. I mean, it's like let the coach finish out the season, even if he knows he's – or you can tell, hey, you know, we're probably not going to keep you, you know. But you don't spike the recruiting efforts and you don't spike the morale of the team and you don't screw over your seniors like that. What, to make some boosters happy that you're just not going to put up with this garbage, and so you're going to fire a coach midway through the season? I don't get it. You know,
I tend to think it's more in the line of the, like, we want it now, you know, mentality that so many college football fans have. And so not only do you get rid of the guy and say, we're not putting up with this anymore, but you get to jumpstart your coaching search before just about anybody else too. And put it out there.
You can start the coaching. I mean, there's no law that says you can't start interviewing coaches until you fire the one you got. You call up Napier and go, hey, yeah, he's not going to be here much longer. Can you come by Thursday and we can talk, you know?
Yeah, you
got time.
Here's the other thing. Are they going to Zoom the interviews? I mean, how's that going to work? Well, I mean, we hadn't talked about that. That's a whole new world of coaching, except some of these guys would take it without any kind of interview if you offered it. But, you know, South Carolina's talking about their facilities and, you know, their commitment and all that. But realistically, you know, Clemson's got a big jump on them in state, and they got a long way to go. To be playing for fourth in SEC East right now, any way you look at it. Tennessee beat them this year. Kentucky, they still got to play. But, you know, at best, they're fourth in the East, wouldn't you guys say?
Oh, yeah. It's not an enviable job, because if you look at just where they stand in the SEC, it's definitely in the bottom third or bottom fourth of the league. But then on top of that, throw North Carolina's success in there and how that can affect recruiting. You know, obviously with Clemson and State, it's a big deal, but you're looking at really any of the big time schools that are within local proximity of Columbia, South Carolina, are on an upward trajectory. So that's going to be a very difficult job for someone to come in and do what Steve Spurrier did.
Coach, if you're on the hiring committee, who's your first call for the Gamecocks?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly Napier. He's got some South Carolina ties, you know, played at Furman. He's done a good job. He would be somebody you'd look at it. I know a couple years ago they looked at Kirby, and then when Kirby came here in the interim part, they looked at Sonny Dykes, who was at Cal then, now at SMU. I don't know. He's got a good system. I think you got to go after established head coach at this point. They'll probably go somebody with more of an offensive background. And this gets a big hire for Tanner. I mean, he's the one that gave this guy a big extension after beating Michigan in the bowl game. And they really haven't done anything since. So, and I'm a big Muschamp guy. I like Will. I think he really treats the players good. He just had a really tough time getting any kind of offense to go with his defense. And then this year he can't have any defense to go when they score points. So they scored a lot of points against Florida, against LSU, and against Ole Miss, but they couldn't stop either one of them. I mean, they beat Auburn. How do you think Chad Morris feels right now about his inability to score on that South Carolina defense? And they just got thumped over there. So, but without these three guys in the secondary, it's going to be a long, tough road for them these last three games.
Roddy, who you calling if you're Ray Tanner?
Dan Lanning. I just know that Dan is going to be a very hot coaching prospect. I saw Memphis go after him last. And my first thought is, how's this going to affect Georgia? And, you know, I know that teams have been looking at Dale McGee and Dan Lanning the last few years because they know what they're capable of. But I agree with Coach, you've got to go after an established guy. And when you you took a chance on Muschamp, you know, and now when you look at it's like, okay, well, he couldn't quite cut it at Florida, but he's going to be able to cut it at South Carolina with less historical success. That seemed like a reach at the time, but, you know, and it didn't work out for him. But I think that South Carolina is turning into just like every – I said turning. This is one of the most loyal fan bases in America. When they were going winless, they were still filling out the stadium. Apparently, you've got money to do this buyout for Muschamp. So, again, I don't know what their finances are, but you're going to have to go after somebody, a big name. You're going to have to make a big splash hire. And
Call Hugh Freeze.
I know he's talented, but I just think
everyone knows he's a scumbag. It's a well-established fact.
Right,
but you need a guy like that to. I mean, look, if you want to win at South Carolina, you're going to have to take a flyer on maybe somebody kind of crazy like that. I think that Dane, you're nodding.
How about Liberty hopping in there with the extension so they can get the buyout money because know this is coming?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I think Hugh Freeze is laying in the weeds looking at Auburn in his own mind, probably see what Auburn does, especially if they can run the table this year. He'll be even more in more demand. He's not in a position to turn down South Carolina, I'm sure, but I just think Sankey kind of holds the cards there. I mean, Sankey kind of put the quietus on him as far as being a coordinator last year.
That's what I was trying to say, coaches. I just don't know that I don't want to say the SEC can approve or disapprove, you know, on something at that level. But it wouldn't surprise me if Sankey's like, "Hey, no, that's not going
to
happen."
You know? I want to live in a world where the dog vent gets to make Hugh Freeze to Auburn jokes, though. That would be that. There's a lot of
oh God, I love the dog vent. I do. We got the greatest job in the whole world that we get paid to read the dog vet. It's the greatest job in the world.
All right, Coach, I got another question for you here. This one a lot of people have been asking, but I like the way that this guy phrased it. Coastal VA Dog on the board. He says, the game has no doubt changed in favor of offenses. We're seeing how elite defenses can be neutralized by a high-powered spread offense. Why is that? What do you think are the key factors that have shifted the advantages from offense to defense? He says, I believe it's the focus on targeting, penalizing players for hitting defenseless receivers, and protecting the quarterback that have all kind of restricted the defense and played a huge role in giving the advantage to the offense. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with him on the restrictions there, but they're all safety related and they all make good sense, you know, and they continue to improve the targeting as far as the actual look at and evaluating, you know. But I think, first of all, high school kids learn to throw the ball a lot earlier, running routes, doing everything. Everybody's a lot more efficient, talented, you know, not only receivers but backs catching the ball. You look at the Florida, the way the backs killed us. I mean, you know, running back now, when you evaluate him, it's just not can he tote the leather, can he protect on pass, but how's his hands, how does he catch the ball? You know, the rules are such that, you know, a lot less on the holding, you know, you got the hands in the framework now. You can hold better. Not that they hold that much, but you can hold better on offense. And, you know, just the fact that coaches look to open it up. I mean, that's the plan. That's what they try to do as compared to, you know, maybe just trying to win and avoid losing. Now everybody's really going out there attacking and doing a lot of good things. So he makes a good point there. It's for sure that the defense has got to be careful about the penalties and all that. But, you know, we're certainly seeing a real big emphasis on the passing game. And people are going to go nuts Saturday night. I'm telling you right now. I don't know that Georgia's going to do this, but the first time we do a three-man rush and drop eight and don't get pressure on the quarterback and he's back there holding the ball for 2 days and 14 nights, where's the pressure? Where's the pressure? But everybody that's played this team, if you've watched them, has dropped eight. Texas A&M, Kentucky, everybody has dropped eight and drove them crazy. And I don't know that we'll do that. I hope we do, because they can't run the ball. They didn't even get a yard rushing against Vanderbilt and won the game. Did you know that? They had 0 yards rushing.
Seriously?
And won the game. So don't go nuts when we don't get an unbelievable pass rush. I think we – I don't see us playing a lot of
– Damn you, Jalen Carter.
I hope we don't run a – I mean, I hope we don't run a lot of butcher knife bandit blitzes and give them a chance to get one-on-one and hit a touchdown on us, because this team is not a big play team. They haven't been all year. So, but just warning you, don't go nuts about when we don't rush the passer Saturday night, because it's going to happen.
I think it's an advantage for Georgia really to be able to get some of those guys back in the secondary and play against a pass heavy offense. I mean, they've struggled at times against Alabama and Florida when it came to that. You know, I think it would do Tyson Campbell well to go out there and be able to, you know, win some 50-50 balls and put together a good game. I think that could be advantageous.
Right. And we'll probably see more 5 and 6 DBs this week than we'll see all year, because they're not a threat to run the ball. I mean, you got to stop their – if you just go back to 1997 when Mummy was coaching there, and then Coach was the Pirate was the offensive coordinator, they threw the ball from about 1:30 until 6:30 that night. We beat them like 47 to something. And it was either 97 or 99. I can't even believe what year it was, but it just took forever to play the dang game. Maybe it's 99. But they how many passes did they throw? And about 17 out of 20 were behind the line of scrimmage.
750,000. And was that the year that they had that in Kroger Stadium? They had the sound effect.
Well, it was our place. It was our place. We played them at home.
I just remember going up there, and they had this jet sound that would come over, like every time they got a first down, like a jet would come screaming.
Yeah, 2000, we played them up there when
God, that was horrible.
Quincy couldn't play. We found out that week he'd broken his thumb, and we played. You know, we had to do what we could, and we ended up winning. But I think it's 1999. They threw all those passes. Look it up.
We'll get one of our historians on there.
Still chaps my ass to think about how long that game took. I know Albert Hollis was on official visits. It was 1999. Albert Hollis was here, and he talked to me after the game. He said, Coach, he said, your team didn't look like a West Coast team, but Kentucky does.
Pulling up that
Charles
box.
Charles Grant ran like 70-yard touchdown on 3rd and 2 in tailback.
Well, you won, Coach, 49-34. So that's good.
Yeah, that was what it was.
But took 6 hours to do it.
49-34.
All right, one last question here, and I thought this was an interesting one for Coach and, well, everybody really. JCheek85 says, do you think Georgia needs to play that makeup game with Missouri on 12-19, or would the staff be better off focusing their efforts on recruiting with National Signing Day and early signing day that next week?
You can't do anything. I mean, for the kids' sake, play the game. It'd be different if we could leave the campus and do everything. It's just like getting ready for a bowl game when you're on signing day, you know. But it used to be you work them out, practice, then you go get on a plane, go see a kid, come back, and go practice the next day. But now, the only thing I don't like about it, the weather's going to be colder than a well digger's rear end out there that day. I'm telling you, it's going to be cold. But at that point, I know our players want to play, the coaches want to play, but we'll be okay on recruiting. I feel like we'll finish it off good.
Coach question. Dusty Bonner attempted 53 passes that day.
Is that all? I thought it was more than that. How many complete?
It completed 33 of them.
For how many yards?
420 yards is what I see.
Yeah. That's terrible, Coach. I'm embarrassed for you.
Does it have a time of the game? How long the game lasted at the bottom?
Nope. All I have is time of possession. I'm not seeing. This is a box score from 1999. The internet was a little primitive.
How many yards did we have? We had plenty, didn't we?
310 passing yards. Is it going to show me rushing? And I don't even see rushing yards on here. But yeah, That was 53 passes.
Didn't Charles Grant run a long touchdown in that game?
Yes, he did.
At the time, 53 passes had to seem.
God, I loved it. I loved how you used Charles
Grant. From another galaxy.
Charles Grant had a 42-yard run. He also had a 1-yard touchdown run. Jasper Sanks had a 7. I mean, we can just do this, get through your old box scores. That's an off season right there.
I'm just telling you, this game starts at 7:30. I want Roddy to bring some breakfast food over. Because this game will be over about 12, even if we kick them. I mean, they just throw so many behind-the-line passes. It's unreal.
Yeah.
All right. It's that time of the week. Let's talk mouthwatering players. Dane,
I'm going to go first again because I had Daniels last week, and I went last. I'm going with Daniels.
Peter?
Jumping first of the line, huh?
Show me the money, man. Show me the time to get out there and see what you can do. Let's see what he can do. And regardless of what's transpired, I think everybody just needs a promise in them. They'll sign a blood oath that no matter what happens, they're not going to say, well, I wish we'd have played him, or why didn't we play him, or I can see why we didn't play him. Hey, just leave it alone. Let's go with it.
I'm going to go with a guy that I think is integral to Georgia's defensive development going forward. I think he's got to work on some of his coverage skills. And against Mississippi State, you get quite a few opportunities for that. Tyreek Stevenson. I want to see what he can do in pass defense against some of these guys. I think he'll be really important for Georgia going into the next season and beyond.
I'm going to go with – oh, God, maybe George Pickens, right? He's supposed to be back. He's supposed to be healthy. JT Daniels going to need a guy out there. So if you got George out there, I think that could be a big advantage for you. You know he's hankering for some big plays as well. Been a minute since he's had one. So I'll go with Pickens out on that limb there, Roddy.
Going with James Cook again, because eventually I'm going to hit on one of these and I'm going to be right. And then I'm gonna pretend like I was got all 10 correct. But my first thought was actually to go with Mark Webb, because I think Mark was going to be integral in coverage situations. I think Mark could have a huge game, but looking at the offense, I think they really need to get that up. And if somebody is willing to hit the check down, you know, you get the ball to James Cook, George will be able to move the ball quite well, especially with that big defensive front. They're going to try to take away the run, get him out in space. Let him burn you. And if they're double teaming or bracketing Pickens, you know, and they're shading over towards Kyrus Jackson, that means that somebody's open. Your third option, Jermaine Burton, hasn't really worked out the way you wanted it to. Marcus Rosemead, Jack Saint's out. So to me, instead of going to that third option or going to the tight end, drop it to James Cook and see what he can do.
Watch out at running back, just the depth situation there. Zamir White's fine. He'll get a lot of carries. We know James Cook will as well. No Kendall Milton in this game. He's injured. Kenny McIntosh coming back from injury. We think he's fine, but we'll have to see. I think you'll probably see some Dejan Edwards in this game as well.
Nice. Yeah. And maybe some black jerseys.
Oh, he said the words.
Okay, change the title of the podcast to Black Jersey Talk.
Hey, what's the school colors here?
Red and black.
Red and black.
And silver.
Hey, let them wear them. It's good for morale. Let them wear them.
I think were you dropping a hint today, Coach, with that shirt you got on?
Were you hearing that that's what they're going to wear?
The rumors are out there.
There was an Instagram post that is making the rounds of a patch being put on a jersey. I think that post has since been taken down by whoever put it up. So whatever that means.
It was a patch on a black jersey?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, some poor intern got fired over there.
You got to be careful with a patch when you're playing a pirate.
Yeah.
That was pretty quick from Mill Coach.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. That's it. Turn off the show. Turn off the show. All right, everybody. I appreciate it. You tuned again. Be sure to check us out at 1 o'clock this Thursday when Coach Don and Brent Rollins and Dane Young do Around the League. They'll be talking about all the games in the SEC, at least the ones that are being played, and they'll recap what happened last week. It's a great show. It's not I mean, they do cover, of course, they'll cover the Georgia game, but they spend a lot of time looking at the entire conference. It's a fantastic show. And they'll be making some predictions there. So check that out Thursday at 1 o'clock, same YouTube channel, same Facebook channels. And of course,
and subscribe on the YouTube channel today too. That way you can catch the live stream from Paulding County tomorrow.
Yeah, right. There you go. Jake will be in the frozen tundra of Paulding down in Dallas and dealing with the commitment tomorrow, or the announcement, I should say, of Smile Mondin. You know, like Georgia's chances there, as Jake says. But if not, you know, he's still covering it regardless of where the kid goes. So that's what we do as a network. We take care of everybody. And then this Saturday, be sure to tune into the Watch Along Show with Coach Don and Dane Young and myself. We will be giving you live commentary on the game as we watch it. It's a great way to find out what's going to happen on these plays before they are called, because Coach Don is normally telling us exactly what's going to happen before it does. And you get a fantastic insight as to what it's like to watch the game with a head coach who sees the game completely different than anybody else. So be sure to tune into all those. And next Tuesday, we'll be back here, same time and channel. We'll talk to you next week.